From high atop the last word on sports.com, CFL headquarters, this is Chunky and the Man. And now the man who knows everything about the Canadian Football League, just ask him, your host, Brendan McGuire.
And hello once again. Thank you, Mrs. Voice, for that kind introduction. This is episode number 26 for the program. Marcus couldn't be with us in studio. He's got some business to look after, although I still think he's just all pissy about me telling everyone that he failed grade one. Hey, I did 2 years of grade one. It's okay. Doesn't have to feel all ashamed about that. We'll have Marcus on a little bit later in the program. But first, we'll start this episode number 26 with retired CFL linebacker Jed Roberts, who played many years with the Edmonton Eskimos, and I want to go to Northern Alberta to chat with him about his football team right now. Young Jedi.
How's it going, buddy?
How are you?
I'm not bad. Yourself?
I'm good. I'm not interrupting. You're not watching the hockey game, are you?
Well, I was, and then I kind of dozed off.
I came upstairs,
but
you're not one of those Oilers fans, are you?
Nah, not really. I'm a Colorado Avalanche fan.
Everybody goes crazy about Canada's team all the time, and I'm a Canuck guy, so I can never ever cheer for the Calgary Flames or the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah.
A few things I wanted
you
to check.
Never ever watch your team in the Stanley Cup either.
No. Guess you win that one. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Eskimos head coach, Jason Moss, who's always been a very polarizing figure. Have you ever met Jason?
I played with Jason.
Okay, you guys were teammates right at the very end, right?
Yeah, for the last 3 years of my career, from 2000 until 2002.
Right, that just hit me. I was thinking there was no overlap, but no, that's coming back to me. That's
I,
right.
I actually have a great Jason Moss story, actually.
Let's hear it.
With the end of my career, yeah. So my last year was in 2002, and it was my 13th season. We played our first game that season against Calgary. We beat them down there, and then we came back home for the home opener on July 2nd, 2002, and we're playing the Ottawa Renegades. And it was like toward the end of the first half, and we had just scored. And I was on the PAT team, so I was playing tight end on the PAT team. And for those of you who don't know a whole lot about me and my career, I was born with a nerve defect in both ears, and that just means I have to wear hearing aids, which is great when your wife is mad at you, but not so good when you need to hear a fire call when the quarterback bobbles the snap. So Jason Moss bobbled the snap, and I didn't hear the fire call, so I'm engaged with the guy across from me, and I don't really hear that thud, you know, because I can kind of hear a little bit, but I didn't hear it. So I looked back, and I realized that Jason had bobbled the snap, and he was running toward me. So I turned back to engage with the guy in front of me, and Jason was being chased by two Renegades players. And he got tackled into me from behind, and then my foot was trapped underneath the whole pile of three players. And
Oh, no.
Dislocating my foot and snapping my tibia and fibula. When everything was cleared and I got up, I realized that my foot was backwards. And so I tried to hop off the field to get to the sideline so they wouldn't stop the play. And the referee chased me and pulled me down from behind, tackled me, and said, "You need to stay put. You know," he says, "You're in shock." And I'm like, "I'm in shock. I know exactly what I'm doing."
Yeah, because the play is more important than your foot, right?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know,
I didn't even know that. So Jason Moss indirectly ended your career.
Yeah, so but there's more. So they take me out the field. I get taken to the hospital. They had to figure out whether they could save my foot. It was pretty bad, but they ended up...
oh, my goodness.
Ended up doing it. And then I woke up from the surgery, and the first person I saw was a tearful Jason Moss. He was crying, standing by my bedside. And he apologized, and he said, "I'm so sorry, you know, it mean." I said, "Jason, it's not your fault. Like, I played for 13 years. Like, this is not, like, this is part of the game, right? It's not a big deal, right? You're going to go on and have a great career, and, you know, it's not a big deal." I said, "I appreciate the sentiment, but it's not your fault any more than it would be, you know, the Renegade guy's fault for tackling you into me. It's just the way the game goes sometimes, right?" So that just kind of tells you what kind of a guy he is. He's a deep character guy. He cares deeply about, you know, players he plays with and coaches. And he's he doesn't do anything halfway, right? So when I see him throwing the headset down, or when I see him, his lip quivering after a game, and he's really upset, or if you see one of those, you know, patented tirades on the sideline, that's just Jason, man. He's just an intense guy, you know. And I actually think, if anything, he's calmed down quite a bit over the years, you know. So what you see now is probably about one-tenth of what it used to be when he played.
Do we need more coaches like that who, I'm not saying we need more coaches like Jason Moss necessarily, but more coaches who, what you see is what you get? Because it seems to me like in the NFL's really bad for this, where a vast majority of the coaches are guys who are just expressionless, emotionless, and just try to be, I don't know, a statue when they're on the sidelines. And I remember when Greg Marshall, not the same Greg Marshall who coached in Saskatchewan, but the Greg Marshall who coached in Hamilton for a little while. When he came in 2004, he won the CFL Coach of the Year, and he was like that. Like, he was hitting guys on the pads, and he was celebrating, and he was yelling at guys. Do you think we miss some of that? Do you think we need a little more?
Well, yeah, you know, it's just such a business now, right? Especially the NFL. I like that you use that example, because it really is like, you know, emotion. There's no room for emotion at that level, and I missed that when I came from the NCAA. You know, I felt like everything was too automatic and too controlled, too antiseptic, too sterile. It's refreshing to see a guy like that, you know, that's not afraid to kind of let people know how he feels. I think Ken Austin's like that to an extent. You know, I'm not a big Ken Austin fan, but, you know, to use an example of a guy that sometimes will just kind of let you know what it, you know, in no uncertain terms where he stands on certain issues. I think Ronnie Lancaster was like that too. If you go back and watch the film in the 96 Grey Cup when Flutie supposedly didn't fumble the ball, Brandon Lancaster lost his mind and he fell down. He was so mad. I don't know if you've ever seen that replay.
Oh, no, I remember that. I remember it like it was yesterday. He was in the snow, and Darren Flutie's like trying to pull him away from the ref.
Yeah. And it was, he was like that too, but people didn't see it. And, you know, now, because they've got everybody mic'd up and they've got all these different camera angles, you just see it. You know what I mean? I think there were always coaches that were that way, but you didn't see it because people didn't choose to make an issue out of it. You know, now if you see a coach betraying emotion, then they want to clue into that and make it a big deal, and, you know, have their little canned responses about, you know, what that might be motivated by, right? So, and I think we've always had those coaches. It's just now it's more noticeable because people tend to pay more attention to it, you know, especially with TSN micing players and coaches and stuff.
That's kind of like when Glenn Gullitson, the coach of the Flames, threw a hissy fit at his players and he threw a stick in the stands, and it was like, you know, news everywhere, and I was just watching it. Yeah. Listen, I love reporting on political incorrectness and all the stories off the field and all that, and I just thought, that's not news, you know, when a coach tears a strip off his players.
Yeah, but it is today, you know. It's reality television, right? People want to know that side of the game, and they want to know, you know, they want to weigh in on it and say, oh, that's not appropriate, or, you know, I mean, the locker room and then the sports field, that was kind of the last bastion of people just sort of, you know, being able to express themselves freely. And now people have to sort of tone down what their responses are because there's a listening audience, you know. And then that's one of the arguments I always put out there when they're talking about miking players up, is that you're taking that out of the game because people are now asking you to sort of censor your words or your responses, and you have to be very politically correct because there is a listening audience at home. Some of those kids can be affected by what you say or what you do. So you don't really have the liberty to kind of act out that way. And I think Jason's one of those last remaining guys that just, if he gets mad enough, he's probably not going to really worry about that in the heat of the moment, right? So there's not a lot of guys that are like that left, you know?
You know, one thing that's interesting, and it's so funny because I was going to cite two examples about the same two coaches that you alluded to, Ken Austin and Ronnie Lancaster. So just hear me out on this, and I'm open to change my perception. But Jason Moss has always given me the perception, well, before I get to that, I'll say, I think that it's so often where, particularly in the game of football, when a guy's a quarterback, his personality as a quarterback and his record as a quarterback seems to translate into the personality of the team that he's the head coach of and the record that he's the head coach of. I'll give you three examples. Ronnie Lancaster, he was the little general on the sideline. He was in control. I've heard stories of from teammates who he was really, really hard on guys. And there were a lot of guys who didn't like being in the huddle with Ron Lancaster. roster. He would throw guys out of the huddle. But at the end of the day, his teams always commanded respect. And it was the same thing really as in the CFL. I know he had a couple of rough years early on in Saskatchewan as the head coach and then at the end of his time in Hamilton. But people don't remember him for that. They remember him for the 7 years in Edmonton. They remember him for turning around a 2-16 team to a 12-5-1 team the next year and then winning the Grey Cup the year after in Hamilton. I mean, he commanded respect just like he did as a quarterback. Kent Austin was kind of the same way in Saskatchewan, where he'd get in players' faces. He was direct with them. I was fortunate enough to be around the 2007 Riders, the year Kent was the one-and-done head coach that won the Grey Cup. And I, to this day, he is one of my favorite football people, just watching how he went about his business and how he didn't have to, you know, put people down, but he could be direct, and he'd tell you more in a sentence than some guys would in 4 minutes. And then there was Danny Barrett, who, as a quarterback, had a good career, probably would have had a much better career if he wasn't stuck in that era of great quarterbacks in the early 90s. But he always left you wanting a little bit more. He's kind of like what Kevin Glenn is today and a lot of the other quarterbacks he toured. And then when Danny was a head coach in Saskatchewan, it was the same thing. It was 9-9, 9-9, maybe miss the playoffs, 9-9, kind of like as a player. And I guess getting around, I took the long way around there, but with Jason Moss, as a player, you always knew he had something there, and then he was replaced by Ricky Ray. I think it was that same year you talked about, 2002.
Yeah.
2003, yeah. He was on the bench. 2004, he comes out, and I'm pretty sure he set a record for completions in one game. I think he, or consecutive completions. I'm pretty sure he went over 5,000 yards that season, and yet at the end of the day, the Esks were 9-9. Lost out first game of the playoffs. Like, it just seemed like he was always leaving something. You were always wanting more out of Jason Moss. Maybe not out of Jason Moss, but out of Jason Moss's teams. And now as a head coach, last season, everything was like picture perfect, man. You know, like, he fought through that great start and then all those injuries that they had to deal with. The players seemed to like him. I remember them coming into Saskatchewan and pounding the crap out of the Riders in the cold and thinking, nobody's going to beat these guys. And then they go into Calgary, and then there's the situation where, you know, he could go for the touchdown to tie, but he kicks the field goal and nobody can figure that one out, you know? And it just seems to me like it's always been that way with him. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, you probably could have a point there. I think that he really, definitely, for sure, has probably set it up for this year that he has to prove himself, right? You know, he's a passionate guy, and he'll make, you know, I remember watching that playoff game last year when he went for that field goal, and I just was thinking, I was hoping that one of the veteran guys in the coaching staff would talk him out of that, you know, like talk to him about, you know, riding your hot hand, riding the momentum, and, you know, not playing it safe like that. And I think that, you know, that's, if I know Jason, I think he'll learn from that, you know what I mean? Danny, I'm going to say, I think that Danny and Jason are different, and I think that, and here's why. I think that Danny is a little bit more of an ego guy than Jason is. I don't think Jason really has the ego that Danny did.
You're talking about Danny Barrett?
Danny Barrett, yeah.
Yeah, I spent every day around Danny Barrett in 2006, and I would agree with that statement 100%. Yeah. Danny is all about Danny, but carry on.
Yeah, and I think that's where the two personalities sort of diverge, and I think, but Jason is one of those guys that if he's in that situation again, I don't think he's going to make that same call. Like, you know what I mean? Whereas I think Danny would be like, I don't care. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Right. So,
right.
Jason is a pretty cerebral guy. And I'm not saying Danny's not, but I think that, I think Jason will defer it as to, he might think a little bit harder about that the next time he's in that situation. Whereas I'm not so sure that Danny would. But this season, I think really he set the table for, he really has a lot to prove, because you're right. He did have that. It was a missed opportunity. You know, I really think that if they go for it, they probably, you know, we're probably talking about a different outcome, you know? So I don't know. That's a great point. I hadn't really thought about that. That's an interesting perspective. Jason's got a really seasoned coaching staff there. Is that's a lot of experience there. I think that in those moments, if you were a newer coach, you would defer to that, I think, to a point. But that's kind of where I sit on that.
Visiting with retired CFL linebacker Jed Roberts here on Chunky and the Man CFL podcast here on LastWordOnSports.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or anywhere where you get your favorite podcasts. I talked about the missed opportunity in Calgary. I don't know exactly where you live, if you're in the Edmonton area, but do you think that with the Eskimo fans, have they forgiven him for that? And I remember flying into Montreal for the Grey Cup. Like, we were going to Ottawa, but we went through Montreal. It's a long story. But when we were flying in, there was an Eskimo fan sitting with us, older gentleman. He was a season ticket holder. And he was just going on and on. Like, you know, he was just so bitter about the way that game had ended. Do you think the fan base in Edmonton has forgiven Jason for that?
I think they're divided. I think it's pretty evenly split down the middle. You know, there's always that camp that just figures, you know what, coaches are going to make those kinds of calls sometimes, and it's all about kind of learning from it. But I do know that there's a big camp here at Edmonton that thinks that, you know, he should have been smarter in that moment. And, you know, I sort of scratched my head when I saw that, and I think that if it bit Jason down, he'd probably admit that maybe he probably could have approached it a different way. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because those types of things happen, you know, down the road, and especially down the stretch, you know, and you've got to be, you know, there's a certain type of coach that would make those types of calls, and I think Jason kind of falls under that category that, you know, sometimes you might wonder where he's coming from and what his thought process was in that moment. So I'm sure he spent a lot of time reflecting upon that. And when that time comes again this year, it'll be interesting to see what he does. You know, I do think that he has a lot to kind of speak to. I think that the fans in Edmonton are very difficult on any coach, let alone Jason. You know, and I think that the expectations are always high here because of the success we've had in the past in the franchise. And, you know, I think a lot of those longtime season ticket holders were just kind of scratching their heads with that one, and not, you know, they were kind of questioning whether Brock was going to keep him around, which I think was kind of silly. But I don't think there's a whole lot of other coaches out there that are better than Jason at this point in the game. You know, we've got to kind of have some sort of continuity after Ed kind of going, and if you went with a brand new coach at this point, it might do a lot more harm than good. So I think Jason's earned the right to have the opportunity to figure it out this year with the, you know, with the playing the coaching staff that he's got. And he's got a pretty good roster set assorted. It's going to be interesting to see what they do on the defensive back end. I think that was their Achilles heel going down the stretch. And, you know, everybody talks about the injuries, but every team goes through that. That's not – the Eskimos certainly don't have the market cornered on injuries and players. I mean, the Saskatchewan Roughriders, you know, went through a lot of that as well, and they were able to fight through it to go within one play, arguably, away from the Grey Cup, you know. So, great teams find a way to kind of play through that. Even when your coach makes a questionable decision, the players have to figure out how to way to kind of play through that, you know. I've seen lots of teams win – in spite of coaches' decisions, you know. And, you know, I can think of the 2000 BC Lions were one example. You know, they overcame a lot of really goofy decisions early in the year to go on and win the Grey Cup with a losing record. You know, good teams find a way to win in spite of that. So
Jason Moss seems like he's so passionate and just stays up all night trying to think of ways to get better and to win. And it seemed to me like sometimes he overthinks things. I think that situation might have been a good example in the West Final against Calgary 100%. Last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. He outthought himself, I guess you could say. And
yeah.
And he called his own.
He made me think of something, though. He made me think of something. Because when he played quarterback in 2004, you know, he had all those yards and he had that success. And part of what made them so successful in 2005 when Ricky Ray came back was the fact that Jason can do one thing really, really well, and that was throw against the zone. Whereas Ricky had a really hard time throwing against zones. Ricky was more of a guy that would feast on your man coverage. And I remember they were having trouble with Ricky in the playoffs against Calgary. And so what they did was they put Jason in, and they ran this series where they were making the linebacker Scott Coe, choose between the up or the deep route. And every time he chose, he was wrong, because Jason just had him for lunch. I think that Jason knows that he's really good at certain things, but I also think that he's smart enough to work on his weaknesses. And that probably, obviously, one of them is his passion. Sometimes he gets the best of him. And I think in those moments, you really have to rely on the people that are around you and make sure that you're pulling them. And if you've got the time, you know, sometimes with the 20 seconds between plays, it's difficult to do that. But you know, it's always good to get some input from the people around you in those moments to make sure that you're doing the right thing.
That was the next thing I was going to allude to. He called his own plays in year one as the head coach. He stepped back last year, which I thought was a great decision. Lost his offensive coordinator to the NFL. And I have to confess, I haven't been reading much up on it in the last couple of months, but my understanding from the offseason was that he was going to go into this year calling his own plays. Should Jason Moss be calling his own plays after what we've learned the last 2 years?
You know, he's pretty successful. I don't know. I just don't know if just a matter if he can manage everything else, right? And I think, you know, if one starts affecting the other, then you really have to review that, you know. There's no question that he's a good offensive mind, and I think his no-huddle offense is pretty difficult to defend against. Is he taking too much on by doing that, you know? I mean, is he going to be able to do the day-to-day administrative stuff and also be able to have success as a coordinator? Well, that's one of the interesting, intriguing storylines going into the season this year. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. You know, I think from the casual fan standpoint, I think, you know, not knowing too much about the game, I don't think people think about that. But when you're a guy that kind of watches football quite a bit, you know what that means when you've got a head coach calling plays. It just makes things all that much more intriguing. I think he can do it, but, you know, it's taking on a whole lot. I know that.
So it sounds like you're a Jason Moss guy. You're really rooting for him. So I'm not going to ask the question if the team can win a Grey Cup with Jason Moss. I think you're pretty confident deep down.
My heart says he can. You know, I just think that also, you bring up some excellent points about learning from those situations where, you know, your passion gets too much. It's the best of you. You know, I think that I'll be honest with you. When Kavis was here, Kavis had the same issues. You know, he would get really, really upset. Really, I coached with him a little bit. I was a guest coach, and he was a very emotional guy, you know, and he was just the opposite of what you see from him when you're talking to him. He's very reserved, but when he's coaching, he just gets so worked up, and then it just, I think it takes away some of his effective, his ability to kind of make those decisions in those moments, right? You know, when you're the offensive coordinator, I think you have to be a little bit more restrained, you know, so that might be something that might either work against him or maybe he's learned from it. I don't know.
Well, did you catch it?
Can, but that's my heart speaking. So,
yeah, no, fair enough, and that's what we're looking for. But did you catch the Johnny Manziel highlights over the weekend? And if so, what did you think?
Well, you know, I think that in the preseason you're going to see a lot of vanilla coverages, and you know, he's going to teams aren't going to really tip their hand defensively. I think he's going to see some pretty. It's like playing slow pitch as opposed to fast pitch, right? So. You know, it's pretty easy to hit the ball when they're pitching it to you slowly, right? So I think that, you know, I'm rooting for him. I think that it's really good for the league. I think, you know, his reputation precedes him, obviously, for the off-the-field stuff. But, you know, anytime you get a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback comes up here and you've got the, you know, he had the success that he had at Texas A&M. And, you know, I always root for those guys when they come up here, especially as a reclamation project. You know, he's obviously looking to maybe extend his career so he can get back to the NFL. So that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering how that's going to affect their team because they obviously had sort of put their stock into Mazzoli, and I'm wondering how they're going to kind of afford both guys. I think maybe they both have incentive-based contracts. I don't know. But that'll be interesting to see if they try to carry both of those guys if Johnny has a lot of success. But when the bullets start to fly and you see, like, for example, when he goes up against a Chris Jones defense and he gives you all those disguises, is he going to be able to have enough discipline to kind of stand in there and take the hit and throw that ball? Because he's not going to be able to take off on his feet all the time, right? So, which is what I saw. You expect that from him. You know, I remember when Doug Flutie came up here, that's all he did for the first six or seven games. He just ran all over the place, right? And then he learned that they devised an offense for him. You know, in BC, he had that success a little bit in the beginning, and then he came to Calgary. And what they did was they put the splits. I don't know if you remember this, but in the 90s, the Calgary Stampeders used to run with about a four, I'm not even exaggerating, maybe a three-yard split between the guard and the tackle, and then probably a yard and a half between the center and the guard. And so what that did was it effectively widened the lane so that Flutie could take off.
Be his own running back. That's how they had those six receiver sets.
I haven't seen anything like that. Like, you don't see teams like that. They're very tight splits now, but, you know, you play against Winnipeg and they would be basically heel to heel on the O-line, but Calgary went the wide splits. And so what that did was it created a lot of lanes for Flutie to throw. And so it'll be interesting to see if they do that in Hamilton for Mantillo, because obviously one of his strong points is improvising. And, you know, if they stick to that and they keep the game plan relatively simple to start with, I think he might surprise some people. But I think, you know, when he goes up against the Rich Stublers and the Chris Joneses of the coaching world, he's going to go through his growing pains, and it'll be interesting to see if he keeps his head.
You mentioned Rich Stubler, and I think that most are expecting that if the Alouettes have any shot this year, that Rich Stubler's going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat and make that defense pitch a few shutouts if they're going to win any games this year. Are you surprised that we aren't hearing more talk about the Alouettes trying to acquire one of those two Ticat quarterbacks, Johnny Manziel or Jeremiah Mazzoli?
Oh, the first thing I thought when Manziel signed in Hamilton was that Mazzoli was going to end up in Montreal at some point, or... You know, maybe that I would not be shocked to hear that, you know, Montreal was calling Saskatchewan to see if they could pry Bridge out of there. You know, it's a small league, right? And everybody talks to everybody all the time. And, you know, I think that definitely you're going to see something like that. I don't think they have their starter right now in Montreal. And, yeah, the onus is going to be on the defense to kind of carry the team until they figure that out on offense. You know, who knows? They might surprise people. You know, and I'm really curious to see how Hamilton's going to come out of the gate. You know, with I'm not sure what the quarterback situation is and if Trevor's okay in Ottawa, but, you know, if he gets hurt, you know, it turns into a two-dog race there between the Argos and the Ticats, right? I don't see, you know, the East, you know, if the Ottawa doesn't have a good quarterback, they might be in the same boat, you know what I mean? So it's going to be an exciting year. You know, it's been really interesting the last few years. The West has dominated the regular season, and then the East has kind of snuck in through the back door and won the Grey Cup. So you really can't – you have to really hedge your bets and just kind of wait and see how everything plays out toward the end of the year. But Montreal is a very interesting storyline. I think Davis is probably looking over his shoulder, you know, thinking maybe I'll get Josh Freeman. And, you know, that's another guy that came up here thinking probably, you know, his strong arm would kind of bail him out. But it's a different – animal when you're playing against 12 players and you've got those windows close pretty fast. You know, that ball has a tendency to float when you're trying to throw that wide side out. It's takes a long time for that ball to get there, so it kind of favors the defense in that. I think so.
Kavis Reed has always just impressed the hell out of me, and that goes back to how he handled the 13th man thing when he was a special teams coach with the Riders in Grey Cup 2009. I thought he did a really nice job with the circumstances in Edmonton. They had some good teams there. I also thought that, well, I remember chatting with him before last season, just thinking he was talking about how you don't measure someone's character by how many rings they have, right? You measure how they treat each situation differently. And he's just always been so impressive. And when people predicted that he would fail in Montreal, I kept trying to come up with excuses and reasons as to why he would not fail, you know, because you just want to root for the guy. And I got to tell you, Jed, I just can't come up with a reason for why he won't fail. You know, they don't have a quarterback. I mean, they have Drew Willey, and Tanner Marsh told us last week, oh, Drew's good. He's a good quarterback. I just haven't seen it, or we haven't seen it consistently enough. And I just don't see it ending any other way than badly for him in Montreal. And it surprises me. Does it surprise you?
You know what? And Kavis has kind of been up against that. You know, I don't know if you probably remember his career ended when he, due to injury, you know, and he was probably destined to become arguably, you know, a legacy guy here. You know, he had such a great career, and it was ended tragically by injury. And few people know this, but he was, we were in Saskatchewan, I think, and there was a hurricane down in, it was Hurricane Andrew? I'm not sure. Anyway, his mom had a heart attack and died just before one of our games. And I was in his room when he got that phone call, and I will never forget it. And I didn't know Kavis to be an emotional guy, but when his mom passed away, I called my mom, and I told her I loved her. I mean, that's how emotional it was, you know. So he's had some heartache in his life, and people don't know that about him. You know, same thing with Jason. His father was a policeman, and he was tragically, you know, taken down by a bullet in the line of duty, and, you know, he lost his father at a young age, you know. So these are guys that have experienced loss in their lives. And
and heartache. So, you know, it's had a profound impact on their personalities, right? And I think that that's why they're so passionate. So, I mean, I don't ever rule against Tavis. I think Tavis, you know, any one of those things would probably cut down a lesser man, you know, and he keeps coming back and he keeps kind of reinventing himself. I guess is probably a better way to put it. You know, the 12 man thing would probably crush a normal guy, you know, but he, you know, here he is. He's the GM of the Montreal Alouettes. So, I mean, part of me is rooting for him. And I don't know. I mean, at one time, Drew Willis really was in the conversation at being maybe possibly elite quarterback someday. But here he is on his third or fourth incarnation with this 34th team. So who knows? Like, I mean, I agree. I think he didn't really get a fair shake here at Edmonton. I think he came pretty close. You know, he took a team to Montreal and, you know, did okay. And I think that was that him. He was the head coach who went to Montreal and lost to the Eastern Semi or something like that. But
that might have happened one year, but they had the great shot, too, when they went to BC in 2011 and just couldn't pull it out in the Western Final. Yeah. I mean, that was an epic clash right there. And they had it. It was
so,
in
I mean,
their
he's
palm.
Had,
yeah.
He's had a lot of interesting things have happened to him, but he's transcended it. And he somehow managed to sort of make the best of it and come back. And I think, you know, of all people to say that to you, you're not defined by your successes. You're defined by how you reacted to the adversity in your life, and he's had more than his share. You know, I can't think of too many people like Jason and Tavis are pretty similar in that they've dealt with a lot of tragedy and they've managed to turn it around and parlay it into some pretty cool success here in the CFL. So I can tell you what, though, I think that if they can get those things sorted out on offense in Montreal, you know, when you've got a Rich Stubler coaching your defense, I mean, you've always got a chance. I think that's going to be interesting. That's going to be the East to me. I think is a little bit more mystery than the West. You know, you've got the West, you kind of know what you're dealing with. Other than BC, you know, everybody's pretty well set, right? You know, some people might argue that Colorado's just not really the guy they want in there, but I've always been a big fan of his. If he's healthy, I think they're automatic contenders. So BC's probably the mystery with Jennings, and you know, their defense has been pretty suspect. But I think in the East, you know, you really don't know what you're going to get from Montreal. And the quarterback situation in Hamilton makes things really, really intriguing in terms of who's going to come out of that. You know, I think Mazzoli will probably be the guy coming out, but they're not bringing Mandeal in to ride the pine if he's any good. You know, if he's any good, they're going to play him, I think. So,
I think
be an interesting year. It'll be fun.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that somebody seems to have some optimism for the Alouettes, because I haven't found anybody else. So, but I agree with you. I think Rich Stubler can be a real X factor and a difference maker for them, even at this stage of his career. Hey, I said we'd keep you for about 15 minutes. We went a half hour deep. This has been terrific. You have so many stories that I had no idea about, you know, Kavis and about Jason. And I'll just tell you a quick little story. And I know we talked about this a little bit. The first memory that I have of Jed Roberts was my dad and I were at the farm watching the 2000 Western semifinal. And I remember Jimmy the Jet Cunningham. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Jimmy the Jet Cunningham catches the ball, and I think he kind of waddles his way out the back of the end zone. He's trying to run the clock down. And then you gave him a lick, and I remember Jimmy was going at you, just going crazy. And I remember we had been working all day, so I taped it on the VCR. And Dad is not even a football guy. He never watches his stuff. He was just watching with me. And we watched that play, and we kept rewinding it over and over. We were arguing about whether or not Jimmy was out of bounds, and we agreed, no, he was out of bounds. I said, I don't think Jimmy wants to take a run at Jed Roberts. I think that Jimmy would probably not do very well in that fight. My dad says, yeah, but when someone does that, man, you got to go. And it's so funny, because never in a million years would I have imagined at that moment that we'd be having the nice visit that we had here today. So this has been terrific. And I hope you'll come on again with us, won't you?
Oh, I absolutely will. This has been fun. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Very good. And that is retired CFL linebacker Jed Roberts joining us from Northern Alberta. I figured we would go and talk to somebody about something other than Johnny Manziel, because I'm getting sick and tired of that story. Not the story itself, but the fact that it's the only thing that everybody keeps talking about on all the talk shows. And now we have the co-host of Chunky and the Man CFL podcast, Marcus Adams. Now, I was telling people earlier, now be honest with me, you had business to take care of tonight. It was really, you're just chafed that I told everybody that you needed 2 years to finish grade one, isn't it?
No. No, I was smart. I had a bad attitude. That's why I needed 2 years to finish grade one.
You needed to be corrected, and now you're a corrections officer, so you know all about correcting behavior.
There you go.
Good for you.
I can change people's lives.
Did you watch Johnny Manziel's debut? Did you see any of his highlights? And if so, what did you think?
I did. I watched it while I was at work. I thought he did pretty well. I thought it was a very simple game plan for him. He didn't go deep a whole lot. So I feel like it was a good game plan for him to get himself, you know, into the CFL game of things and the speed of football up here. And I thought he did pretty well, you know. So.
Yeah, you know, my expectations weren't real high, and I thought he at least met those. At the very least.
I mean, I thought so, too. I thought he did better than Jeremiah Mazzoli.
Let me ask you this. You've been on a coaching staff before, and the sense that I'm getting, because I've never played the game, never coached it, just a talking head, just a fan, but everybody always automatically assumes that if a guy has a good quarter or a good half or a good game where he makes a few big plays, they think he should be the guy in charge. And I don't think that's what the coaching staff is looking at. It's the same reason why Marquise Williams is no longer in Saskatchewan and Joe Watford will be the third string quarterback this year. It's the same reason that they kept putting Kevin Glenn back in. The question that the coach wants answered is, can he follow the script? Can he go through his progression? Can he make his reads? Can he get the ball out in time? That kind of thing. And I don't know if I really saw that with Johnny Manziel so much. I saw a guy who was just running around, just kind of doing his own thing on the field. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I mean, I think Tim James did that on purpose. He said that it was very basic and very easy, so the defense could get a good read on him, I thought. But, I mean, the receivers were going no more than 10 to 15 yards down the field. So I think that's to get open, and that time span is pretty hard. So I feel like Johnny Manziel did what he's supposed to do, is run around and make plays with his legs. I think that's what Doug Flutie did back in the day, and I feel like Johnny Manziel is going to follow those footsteps.
I quizzed Jed about Jason Moss, and we've talked a lot about Jason Moss. I've loved to rail on Jason Moss, and the reality is I think that he's good for the league, and he's certainly not the worst head coach out there, and he's his own personality. But the other thing that I notice is it seems like his personality as a player, like his football career, sorry, not his personality, mm-hmm. his identity as a player was always a guy everyone knew about, always a guy who mattered, but he always left you wanting a little bit more. And that's the impression I had when Danny Barrett was a player and a head coach, and that's the impression I get with Jason Moss. In your opinion, can the Eskies win a Grey Cup with Jason Moss as their head coach?
No.
You are not on the Jason Moss bandwagon.
No, I mean I think he's a pretty good coach, but I feel like I think what's going to really hurt them is their defense.
You don't think they're going to have a very good defense this year?
No, I don't think Mike Benavidi is. I don't think his defense that he has is very. I thought the defense he had in BC when he was in BC. Was good because he had Cam Wake, he had Aaron Hunt, he had Brent Johnson, he had Tyrone Williams at the front. So he could call a base defense and never had to blitz and still get pressure on the quarterback and stop the run. So I feel like he needs those type of players on that defense to have a good defense. So I don't know. I just don't see it happening for them when that coaching staff they have now is on the team.
Yeah,
and I don't know about Jason Moss, but I think he shouldn't be calling plays.
Yeah,
I think that.
Should be or should not be?
He shouldn't be. No,
not at least as the head coach. I don't mind him calling plays if that's his only job or his primary job.
Yeah.
But being the head coach, I'm with you. I think that's too much. Yeah.
Yeah, and, too much. I think too much. I mean, unless you like the writers here with Chris Jones, and you got 30 people on your staff who can help break down film for you, you know, and tell you what other teams are doing, that's easier. But for him, they don't have the Rough Rider type money, so they don't think they can you know, I think Jason Moss is doing a lot of stuff by himself, and that's, you can't do that as a head coach.
Yeah, sometimes we make a lot of the fact that Chris Jones wears four different hats as the VP of football operations, the head coach, the general manager, and defensive coordinator. And the reality is he's not really wearing four hats when you really think about the responsibility, right? Like VP of football operations. Okay, what does that mean? It means he's the GM, right?
It just means that he's in charge, but who did all the work?
He's delegating a whole bunch of people. It's kind of like in hockey, sometimes you'll see a guy who's the coach and GM, and remember one guy who worked in the Western Hockey League as the coach and GM. Well, his assistant ran the practices, you know. he wasn't putting in the time of most head coaches, so at the end of the day, really just matters how you're organizing all of it. And I think the point that you're alluding to is that in Edmonton, he literally is doing two jobs, and it seems like it's just a little too much, and I think he tries to outthink himself. But as I guess to put the Jason Moss thing to bed, the view I have on it is you couldn't win a Grey Cup with him as your starting quarterback, but he was great to have as a backup, and you could win a couple of Grey Cups, which the Eskimos did with him as their backup quarterback. Yeah. And just like I think that you can win a Grey Cup with Jason Moss playing an important role, like as the offensive coordinator, I just don't know that you can do it with him as the head coach. And I guess that's the point that I'm making.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, if they do win with him as a head coach, more power to him. I will cheer for him all day long, but I just don't think they will.
A lot of people whining and complaining about the fact that TSN added the Ticats' second preseason game, didn't add the Ryder game. I think this is just a bunch of Ryder fans whining. What do you think?
Of course. I mean, TSN is where? In Ontario. The Ticats are in Ontario. You got Johnny Manziel. He's the hottest ticket right now in the CFL. TSN would be a fool if they did not bring him on TV more, because that right there is affecting, I think, people in the States are watching more CFL ball because of Johnny Manziel. So I feel like TSN did a smart thing. The Ryder fans just have to get over it, okay?
They just have to whine and complain about something. They can never just be happy. They always have to whine and feel slighted all the time. And listen, I'm a Ryder fan, and, well, you get all of that. But, hey, it just more than proves my point that the season is starting way too early, because they're competing with the Stanley Cup Finals and all this other crap. So you and I solved this, like, sitting here at my kitchen table, and I'm glad that it took that for you and I to set the record straight for the commissioner's office. Hey, this has been fun. Thanks for coming on again, pal, and we'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, for sure.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. That's it. Episode number 26 in the books here on Chunky and the Man CFL podcast. Don't forget to find us at lastwordonsports.com and find all of our CFL columns over there. You can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Good night, everybody.